Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Today, a special opportunity, unique opportunity, to get to learn a little bit more about DCEs. Many of you know that I'm a director of Christian education. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, go to our website, kfuo.org, and look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section there. Representing DCEs for us today from the National Association of DCEs Board of Directors, we have in studio with us today Brent Howard, DCE from Christ Lutheran Church in Overland Park, Kansas. Brent, welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you in studio today, and looking forward to learning a little bit more about your work and service as a DCE. Joining us again, back to Faith and Family, this is Debbie's probably second time, joining us in studio today, Debbie Arson. She's the director of the DCE program at Concordia University Chicago, and my alma mater as well. Debbie, welcome back.
Thank you.
Glad to have you in studio. Looking forward to catching up on what's going on with the DCE programs at the Concordia Universities. And also in studio today, Daniel Meyer, Director of Christian Education at Christ Memorial Lutheran Church here in St. Louis. And this is second or third time for you as well. Second? Well, Daniel, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you in studio today. Let's learn a little bit about your work as DCEs. What drew you into that vocation, that journey, that path as an educator, and then also we'll talk a little bit about your work as what you're doing as the board for the National Association of Directors of Christian Education. Brent, tell me a little bit about your work at Christ Lutheran Church.
I serve as director of Children's and Youth Ministries. And we focus on Christian education for birth through high school. We have a staff there of full-time and part-time folks who really do a great job of coordinating the various age levels of Christian education. But we really see ourselves as equippers of parents who share faith and help their children grow in faith in the home as well as in worship and within the church setting.
Brent, when did you first learn about the vocation of DCE, Director of Christian Education?
So I had two DCEs in my home congregation who just had a great impact on my life, and Doug Widger, who's now a pastor in Fort Worth, and then Myron Harms, who's still at my home congregation, about 27 years now, I think, but very influential on my life, on modeling for me what it means to be a disciple. Disciple of Christ. And that was inspirational. I knew they both went to Concordia Seward, so that's where I ended up, and just had a great experience of growing in faith, but also seeing and experiencing the joy that they had in seeing others grow in faith, building disciples, just helping people grow in Christ within the home, and really appreciated that experience. That's what guided me there.
Very good. Daniel, tell me about when you first learned about this vocation of DCE. What was your first experience with a DCE?
Well, I grew up at Concordia Kirkwood, actually just kind of up the street here from from where we're doing this interview, but I had several there. There was a DCE named Ben Freudenberg. So I remember being a kindergartner in Sunday school up in the gym, and I remember him coming up one of the first times we were new members of the church, and him introducing himself and kind of coming down to my level. And that obviously, that relationship grew over the years. But then also when I was in high school, DCEs Jeremy Becker and Jim Meyer joined the program with Jeremy as an intern, and then switched to junior high, but was still doing stuff with the high school kids as well as Jim Meyer. And so whether it was mission trips, youth gatherings, a lot of leadership opportunities provided for us that really got me excited about DCE ministry as I saw their heart and passion, not only for youth, families, children, but their passion for the Lord. And so it was really inspirational for me to be part of that and witness that.
Now, this is radio, so no one can really see what's going on. When you say Ben Freudenberg coming down to your level,
yeah.
Today he'd have to come up to your level.
Correct. Correct. Yes, he would. A little bit of an elevator, scissor lift, something like that. Yes. Yeah.
But I could picture Ben doing that, you know, just getting down and talking with the students that he serves, the children and the families that he serves. He certainly has the heart for that and always wants to relate to the people he's serving. Debbie, how about you? Tell me your story. When did you first learn about this vocation of DCE?
My first connection with DCE students actually happened during my undergraduate college years when I worked at Camp Luther Homa in Oklahoma. That's where I first met students who were at our Concordias who were studying for DCE teacher, pastor. And that's really my connection. And that really helped change my course in my undergrad school to leave where I was at and to go to one of our Lutheran schools for that education.
And so tell me a little bit about the DCE program now that you lead at Concordia University Chicago. What does that program look like? How long does it take someone to, you know, that formation for a DCE, and what do you hope they gain along the way?
Sure. The typical program at our university in Chicago is an undergraduate program. If a student comes in with no extra credits or anything like that, it is about a 4.5 to 5 year program, which includes a 1 year internship. And in those 4 years on campus, they have a DCE major, which includes courses like church leadership, parish teaching, counseling, youth ministry, family ministry. So a real variety of courses that will equip them to be DCEs in a congregation. They also get a theology minor, and new as of this year is that they also now will get a second minor in something related that they can use in ministry, such as education, nonprofit management, sociology, things like that, that they can incorporate into ministry in maybe a different way. And as part of their education, they're involved with field work, so we partner them with local congregations to do work in the parish, and that allows them to get hands-on experience working with pastors, other church workers, and then building relationships with kids and youth and parents and other adults. So our hope is that by the time they go on their internship, they've had all of their coursework completed, and they've had good hands-on experience that for them really helps them say, yes, this is what God's calling me to do, and now I can take everything I've learned and then put it into practice on my internship.
What do you want them to be equipped to do when they go on to internship or their first call as a director of Christian education?
Probably one of the things we talk about the most is that ministry is about relationships. And so we talk about it, we teach about it, we practice it, about how do you build relationships with your coworkers, with your volunteers, with the people you do ministry with. So relational skills are really important. We also believe that DCEs are in the ministry to equip other people for ministry. So it's how do you work with people to help build them up, recruit them, train them, equip them, support them in ministry. So a lot of it is leadership skills. That's a really important piece for DC ministry. How do you lead as a servant leader? How do you help people find their niche in ministry to serve best?
Daniel, tell me a little bit about your service at Christ Memorial. What are your responsibilities and how do you care for the saints there at Christ Memorial?
Yeah, my job title is youth minister or, you know, minister to youth. And obviously we kind of focus then with middle school, high school kids. So you're looking at confirmation, mission trips, taking kids on youth gathering, those types of things. But then I would use the phrase, you know, other duties as assigned. So it's included things like overseeing our children's Sunday school, overseeing our VBS, working with those other lay leaders and other other staff people on different things, you know, back to confirmation. We are with our pastors, we have three pastors, our confirmation faculty is what we call that. But, you know, I've shared with people in the last year or so, I've done everything from HTML coding on our church website to graphic design. I was on a 10-year anniversary refresh of our building. We've been in our space 10 years and it needed some new paint and some different things. So I was able to be part of that. And so a lot of different things. Work with our daycare and preschool as well, doing chapels, get over to our association Lutheran school, whether it's chapel, as I call it, kind of bugging the kids and just seeing how things are going at lunch, things like that. And so definitely just a lot of opportunities, as we've kind of shared already, with relationships, connecting with those children, those youth, those families, parents, the more experienced adults in the congregation, really, yeah, all ages.
So DCEs serve in a variety of ways. There are certainly some very general ways, but it sounds like with unique skill sets or gifts, as well as unique needs in the local congregation, it can vary from place to place in terms of what a DCE might specialize in as well. So what are some of the general ways in which a DCE might serve? Daniel, you mentioned some in your setting, and Brent, you mentioned some in your setting. What is it that DCEs are equipped to do in terms of, you know, all DCEs in terms of as a generalist? Debbie?
Primarily, they are directors of Christian education. So we really teach that Christian education is the foundation for whatever ministry, whether that's with children, youth, adults. So that's their foundation. I would say that most students coming into Concordia come in with the intent of doing youth ministry. That seems to be an initial draw, often because they've had a DCE or a youth worker in their life that has had great impact on them. What happens over the course of their education is that it gets fine-tuned. So some will walk out saying, I really want to focus on youth ministry. Some will start to shift. And so as they do field work, they might say, I really love working with little kids, or I really want to work with families. So I would say the predominant areas would be Christian education and then children, youth ministry are probably the most common. But then we do have others who want to do like adult education. Some like myself, when I served in the parish, I did a lot with music. Some want to do outreach. But definitely youth mm-hmm. education is probably the most common.
Brent, what would you say in terms of how much of your time is more of a generalist and how much of your time is more of a specialty area that we were just talking about?
You know, I would say it is more specialized in that it's focused, my work at Christ is focused on the ages of birth through high school. So, but there are also other opportunities to share and influence in other ways, but it is primarily in that area of children's and youth ministries.
How would you say, what is the relationship between DCE and pastor, DCE and parents or family? What's that relationship? What does that look like? How would you describe it? We'll start with Brent and we'll work our way around the room.
Sure. Well, I learned going through the DCE program at Concordia, Nebraska, the DCE position is one of an extension of the pastoral office. And so specializing in Christian education, the pastors have a lot of duties, especially in larger congregations, and for one person to have all of those duties on their shoulders is a tall task. And so then, as Missouri Synod began the Christian Education Director piece, it allowed folks to be trained to come in and help pastor in their role in equipping the saints for ministry and using their gifts to help others grow in Christ.
Daniel, how would you describe that relationship between pastor and DCE, family or parents and DCE?
Yeah, I mean, I would say for me personally in my setting, mm-hmm. And it's been similar in the other places I've been previously serving, is that have usually had, for the most part, a good relationship with that pastor. You know, we're partners in ministry. obviously I need to have some boundaries that are dictated by him, maybe a church council, maybe another board or committee that kind of dictate what I'm able to do or not do. But then within that, to go to do my vocation, to minister to those families, obviously report back as needed, whether that's verbal, emails, lunches, those types of things, to do that. And it's fun to, like I said, the confirmation or something where we kind of do ministry together. And we're working together to carry out that ministry. And hey, what do you think about this? I've got this idea and change for this next year. Hey, I was thinking about doing this. Okay, how do we implement that? Work together to really make that ministry happen. And then other things, it's hey, go do your thing and just let me know how it went. And then really, when it comes to parents, it's really I think especially into the as kids get older, and parents are hopefully trying to successfully, you know, have kids eventually leave their house someday, you know, and whether that's college or military or a job or whatever that is really just working with them to provide opportunities for faith discussions to take place. Obviously, there's programming and ministry opportunities, but sometimes it's as simple as just, you know, seeing a parent in the, we call it the commons, but maybe the narthex of church is saying, hey, how are things going? How's it going? Or I heard this about your student, whether really positive or sometimes, unfortunately, not as positive. And how's that going with that situation? And how can I pray for you? And, you know, as well as, hey, did you get the payment in for the trip deadline? Or is your medical release form in? Or those types of things. But it's definitely a joy, usually, to really converse with them and just see how life is going and have another place as they try to raise children in the faith. And as we all know, with this world we live in, there's a lot of challenges and obstacles. And I think people appreciate having another person come alongside them to support and encourage them in that process.
Debbie, how would you describe that relationship between DCE and pastor, DCE and parents, or maybe other servants in the church too?
One of the things that we teach about a lot is that DCEs are team players, and they are trained to be in team ministry. And so we do talk a lot about that role of the pastor. What does that look like? How is it different and unique from DCE ministry? And then how can they best work together with that pastor? It's a critical relationship. And we really want them to be in healthy teams, understanding that their calling is different, but in the eyes of God, their calling is the same. They're called to be servants of the church. So we do a lot of work with that particular relationship. I also teach them a lot about that when you're doing, say, children's ministry or youth ministry, you're really doing family ministry because the parents are involved with that. And so while some of them want to just hang out with kids, the reality is that they need to hang out with parents too and build that relationship. And as was said, you know, to say, we're here to support you, care for you as a family. How can we walk with you? How can we pray for you? How can you help us? How can we do this together? So it's a lot of good partnership conversation. And when parents feel like they're being supported by the church, it makes a huge difference in what you can do in ministry.
Serving as a DCE is a unique vocation. It's not a typical 9-to-5 job, like not that the typical 9-to-5 job is still so typical anymore for anyone, but you perhaps have different hours than those of the families you serve. How do you stay healthy? How do you keep the saw sharp and stay on top of the education for you and keeping that saw sharp as a professional serving in the church? How do you stay on top of that, Brent?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's always that's a constant a challenge to do so. You know, a lot of DCEs, a lot of pastors have a designated day off, and I try to stick to that and remind other DCEs, you know, honor that time. And but there's a lot of creativity involved with balancing the demands of serving in a congregation as well as the family schedule. And so that can be a challenge, but one that our congregation has been very flexible in working with all of its workers, pastors, DCEs, and so forth, to provide that opportunity to model what it is to lead your family in the faith, but then also to carry out what the congregation has called you to do as well.
Daniel, how do you keep the saw sharp as a professional? How do you stay healthy as a servant?
Yeah, so when I was at Concordia, Nebraska, Pastor Dr. Vasconcelos, he said, you know, if you don't take control of your time, someone else will, especially in ministry. And so it was kind of learning. So how do you say no, and how do you set appropriate boundaries? And so to kind of Brent's point about having that day off, or obviously sometimes there's a youth event or some other kind of ministry opportunity on Friday nights or Friday during the day. And so you're prepping and preparing. I usually have Friday as my day off. So sometimes it's working with my congregation, hey, you know, Monday I'm not going to be in, or I'm going to take half a day here, or I'm going to do this. Obviously, when you do something like youth gathering or mission trip and you're gone for 7, 8, 10 days, basically 24 hours on the clock, it's really scheduling that time in to do that. I'm a non-caffeine person for the most part. And so people always think that's kind of interesting and laugh at that. But my secret is kind of I try to get decent sleep. I can't be staying up till midnight every night. I try to eat somewhat healthy. So I try not to do fast food 3 days, three times a day, every day. And I try to do that. And I try to, you know, get some exercise. I love a good nap, do those types of things. But I really try to as well work with my family. My wife and my two kids are really great with knowing that there's what I call kind of the phases or seasons. And so you're going to have this next 3 weeks, it's going to be pretty intense, and the time's going to be limited. But then maybe the next week or two after that or whatever, try to you never find that perfect balance, but try to find that balance of getting the tasks and work done, but also taking time to relax, to spend time with them, do activities. Hey, we're going to take this Friday and we're going to go do something special. My wife's a teacher, and so we try to take advantage of Fridays during the summer, and hey, we're going to go to this water park today, or we're going to go to this, you know, other place, and to try to notch that out and put that on the calendar, because otherwise something else will fill that. And so it's, yeah, the appropriate boundaries.
Debbie, keeping the saw sharp, staying on top of your game as a professional, you know, always, and also making sure that you're staying healthy too. I know one thing that you did, you had a chance to go and spend some time in another whole country and culture.
Yes.
Tell me about keeping the saw sharp and staying healthy.
For me, the key word is boundaries. And I think sometimes as church workers, we think that we can never say no. And that is totally wrong. Because when we don't say no, that's when we become unhealthy. And honestly, if we're not taking care of ourselves, we're not able to care for others. Mm-hmm. So over the years, I've become more intentional about turning off technology at certain times. My students know that there's certain times, like by the end of the day, that I'm not going to answer a text or an email or a phone call, like over the weekend, unless it's a true emergency. I set those boundaries for taking a day away during the week. I take vacation regularly because I have seasons too that I'm out of town a whole lot. And I realize that I kind of make my way through that, but then I take times to rest. And I had a sabbatical 2 years ago, and I basically was away for 6 months, but I was 3 months over in Slovakia. And I did a variety of travel and things like that, but what I probably did the most of was literally rest and leisure. And it really opened my eyes to how much healthy you are physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually when you just slow down, slow way down, and do that. And it's critical to do that.
Well, I remember you sharing with me in a brief conversation, one of the things you learned while you were there was just how that in general, the culture there is very family oriented, and that the family has that rest time together,
yes,
that time to play together, to be together, and that, you know, that was really key to one of the key things you learned in your experience there.
It really was, because it's when you're in a different culture, their pace is different. And I love that about, I was in Europe, you know, so I love that about the fact that many stores closed at 7 o'clock. People didn't go out to eat all the time. Family time was very important, and they work hard, but they don't work like 12 hours a day. So that was very eye-opening, and it was hard coming back to this country and the pace that we expect.
Yeah, we sometimes run at breakneck speeds. Yeah.
Well, and I think of two, just the biblical model that Christ set out for us is Jesus didn't say yes to everything, and he didn't fill his whole day. I mean, we've got the scripture telling us how he went away and spent time in prayer. And if Jesus can kind of take a break, then I suppose we can too, you know?
Right, that time set apart for meditation on God's word and to rest, to be recreated in him, Well, you all are here also for the National Association of DCEs this week, and tell me a little bit about the National Association of DCEs. What your I know you have a lot on your plate, and you have a meeting to get back to. What is the work of the NADCE that in general, and what are some of the things that you're working toward this year? Who wants to go for that?
The NADCE board meets annually, and this year we're dealing with a variety of different things. We have our next national conference coming up in January in Orlando, so we've been doing some work with that. Part of our board is to talk about the bigger Ministry of DCEs. How can we support and advocate for our DCEs who are out in the field? What are the issues that in the church, in our Lutheran church, that can affect DC ministry? How can we do things better, differently across the board? So we talk about a lot of different kinds of things. We're also in the process of working on different resources that we can provide for our members and others that will help and assist them in their ministry.
Very good. Well, thank you all for your time here today. Thanks for sharing about your work as DCEs, your vocation, and also National Association of DCEs. And it's been a pleasure talking with you. Brent Howard, Christ Lutheran Church, Overland Park, Kansas. Thanks for being my guest today. Debbie Arfson, always great to have you in studio from Concordia University, Chicago, director of the DCE program there. And Daniel Meyer from Christ Memorial Lutheran Church. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
Pro-abortion Democrats in Congress and Hillary Clinton are lashing out against pro-life Republicans. They're accusing them of not funding help to fight the Zika virus associated with birth defects. The Democrats are now blocking their own bill because some relatively minor funding included for Planned Parenthood is being cut. So why are pro-abortion politicians falling on their swords over this? I believe it's because Planned Parenthood is desperate to attach itself to something perceived as a good, like battling the Zika virus. They've taken it on the chin lately with the videos showing them selling baby body parts and could lose all their funding. It's a desperate attempt to give them credibility to keep the tax dollars flowing. Let your congressperson know your opinion.
Follow us on Twitter at Life Issues USA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on behalf of Concordia Plan Services, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, the LCMS Foundation, Lutheran Housing Support Corporation, Concordia University System, and Corporate Synod, daily reaches out to our members and partners, working together to support our local, global, and international ministries, church workers, and LCMS initiatives at large to carry the mission forward and to serve each other in love. Opportunities to serve, lcms.org/jobsboard.
When disaster strikes, lives are turned upside down. Survivors often need food, clothing, shelter, and spiritual care as they begin to cope with tragedy and loss. As members of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, we show mercy and love to our communities because of the great grace and love that God has first shown to us. Find out more about Lutheran Early Response Team training in September in Brighton and Colorado Springs, Colorado. Email disaster at lcms.org. That's disaster at lcms.org. Registration ends September 5th.
Hi, I'm Grace Kane, a junior at Lutheran High School South in St. Louis. Every day, I can grow in my faith with Christian faculty and other young believers. Together, we grow in the challenging academic environment at Lutheran South. Thanks to my school, I'm ready to not just go to college, but excel in college and throughout the rest of my life. Have you checked out Lutheran schools lately? Learn more at lhssstl.org. That's lhssstl.org.
Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news, reliable and trustworthy. KFUO, your pioneer of Christian radio, AM 850 and KFUO.org. The message is clear.
Today's presentation is an encore presentation. Any dates or events mentioned in the program have already occurred. You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. And what's that relationship between school and parent? We're going to talk about that today with Dr. Rebecca Schmidt, Associate Director for Lutheran Schools, School Ministry here at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Becky, welcome back to Faith and Family.
Thanks, Andy. It's always my pleasure to be here. And what a great topic, one near and dear to my heart.
Absolutely. Now, let's talk a little bit about, I know we've talked about this before, your background in education and your path to coming here to the International Center and working with others in LCMS schools here at the IC, working with Terry Schmidt, the director here. Let's talk a little bit about your background as an educator, a teacher, a principal, right, as well?
Yes, both. Mm-hmm. All of the above.
Well, let's talk about those early years when you were first teaching and you were so excited about being a teacher.
Well, I actually began my career in education in an early childhood center, and I was the 4-year-old lead teacher. Mm-hmm. And worked in that area, welcoming children, getting to know parents, and actually that foundation has been an excellent preparation for the following experiences that I had as teaching in kindergarten, working as director teacher, and then principal in 3 different schools, and then on to the International Center.
Your work as an educator, you do all this, you do your education, you're 4 years plus to prepare to be a teacher, and then I'm sure have gone on for more education as an educator, now Dr. Rebecca Schmidt, and all this study, this education focused on teaching a child. How much of that time in education as an educator prepares you to work with parents, to engage parents, to partner with parents in teaching their children?
You know, that's a great question, Andy. And as I think about it, our preparation focuses on very strongly on what children should know. Mm-hmm. And the methodology for teaching children. But we find and we know from our own experience as educators, as parents ourselves, that engaging a child's parent is first and foremost and such a crucial part of the educational experience. Mm-hmm. For families.
When did children come into the picture in the Schmidt family? Had you been a teacher for a while?
About 3 years. Mm-hmm. So at that time I had worked in the child care center for 2 years and then had been involved in serving in a kindergarten classroom when I had my first child.
So children come into the Schmidt family, and how did that change your perspective as an educator, having children in your own family? Did it change your perspective?
Well, I think it did. Certainly a much greater understanding and empathy for parents. Mm-hmm. And being highly organized in the classroom and then being at home and managing a child's relationship and everything that happens before that child reaches the door was probably one of my better educational moments. And so when we look at that, we reflect and think, how can we make this transition from home to school, mm-hmm. and what are the ways that strengthen that relationship?
Relationship, that's the word that keeps coming up over and over again. Why are relationships key? Why are they important in education?
Well, imagine this. And just as you had asked me, Andy, imagine this is your first child, mm-hmm. and your child's first experience in a preschool, or if you have older children, it's their first day of school in a new school. And it isn't an instant mm-hmm. Acceptance, and it takes much preparation. It takes time, and it takes caring teachers to mm-hmm. make that all work.
Absolutely. I know for us, I mean, we are, this coming spring, I think we'll be 1 year into preschool. Our son started around 18 months, and he was the young one in the class, you know, in his two-year-old class. He was the young one and kind of the somewhat shy. So he's in the same class this year, this academic year. And so he's the older one. He's been there for a while. He knows how things work on the playground. He knows how things go in the second grade, or in the 2-year-old class, the busy birds. And he knows how that works. And so there's a new incoming freshman class, if you will, of new preschoolers, those 18 months around there coming in. And we can see the teachers and my wife and I can see how he's changed in the classroom a little bit now that he's one of the older kids, and he knows a little bit more about the culture of the classroom and is kind of taking the lead on some things. It's kind of interesting how just how those relationships have developed in the classroom, relationships with the teachers, with the other kids, and certainly obviously with us as parents as well, how he's stepping up.
Well, the great part about this, Andy, is you've been able to reflect on that and experience what your son's experience was in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen by accident. The fact that you were able to talk about how he's grown, mm-hmm. and where he was when he began and where he is now. Lots of conversations have happened with your school, and your school has done a good job of preparing mm-hmm. and allowing that conversation to happen and to assure about benchmarks and mm-hmm. and progress and adjustment and all of the aspects of caring for a whole child. So when we look at these kinds of things, we look at how do we build a trusting relationship. And for you to feel comfortable knowing that your son is being well cared for mm-hmm. in a safe, loving, and Christian environment is pretty critical.
Absolutely.
And so we start at the beginning. All of these foundations are built before either parent or child sets foot on a school's campus. So those first impressions are mm-hmm. important. And each of these pieces, there are systems in place that will help build that relationship. A first impression. How did you find out about the school? Mm-hmm. Is the word of mouth positive?
Mm-hmm. A school's reputation in a community is worth a lot, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And it's supported in a number of ways. What was the phone call like when you called to request a visit or a tour? And was the school organized? Was the material organized? Was your greeting warm and welcoming and inviting and purposeful? Was the site clean and attractive and also inviting? And so all of these pieces are helping you to build that relationship. And more importantly, in that, did you have a good feeling about the staff? Was the school administrator, the principal, or the director asking questions about your family and getting to know more about your son and the things that you're looking for? And then that follows up with How did the visit go? And it really just is very, very important in all of those steps.
Sure. That's kind of the beginning of the relationship. It starts with you find out about this school somehow, whether it's through word of mouth, somebody in the community, or you find out because you're looking for it specifically online or in a directory or something like that, and you find the school. That first impression is really important. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So once you're established at your school, there are many, many other small, subtle components that also create that invitational setting. A home visit, maybe, perhaps, mm-hmm. by your a parent.
Which is something I think, as a Lutheran in Lutheran education, is perhaps maybe unique to us. I don't know, not entirely, but I don't ever recall seeing that in any other education setting. You know, as a student who went to public school most of my life, home visits were just unheard of in the public school setting. So I think that for us, that's something that's unique and perhaps foreign to some families. That might be a shock to some families who are new to Lutheran schools.
And I think the key is adjusting. The home visit is a powerful experience for the child, for the parent, and for the teacher. Mm-hmm. Everybody gains in being able to visit ahead of time.
Now, as a teacher making a home visit, are you just looking to see how clean our house is?
I'm looking to see what kind of treats you serve also. But the most, and of course we laugh about those things, but
those are the fears, legitimate fears of some parents.
Oh my goodness.
They're going to see how messy my house is. Well if you have a toddler.
Well, we always take the oath. I promise not to report anything that's said here. If you promise not to report anything that's said here, but that home visit is so powerful for children. Mm-hmm. And in my own children's experience, they looked forward to the time that the teacher would visit. Today, we have many options that accomplish the same purpose. Perhaps it's a visit to the classroom ahead of time with an opportunity for the child and teacher and parent to just visit and explore the classroom, drop off supplies. And so the importance is the connection before the first day. And how do we help children and families become acquainted with the classroom and routines, and it's these are great ways to do that.
Can we go back to the home visit for a minute to alleviate some fears? I know we were joking about it's not about how clean your home is. What are some of the typical things that you would do as a teacher in a home visit just to help the parents who are new to Lutheran schools or new parents understand that what's going to happen in a home visit so that they're not afraid about the teacher coming to our house?
I would just use it as a chance to just get to know you. Mm-hmm. And this is, I would bring something for the child to have and to hang on to their refrigerator. I love to bring clips. This is for your artwork that you'll be bringing home and special things that you're doing. This is a time I would leave contact information and a monthly calendar, mm-hmm. and talk about what parents can do to support their child's education. Lots of it is just questioning, answers, mm-hmm. and questions, and of course that a child usually has something special they want to show the teacher, and so that takes time too.
Pet or something, yeah.
Rubbed many dogs' ears and cats' ears, and visited many special places. Inside mm-hmm. and outside.
I think for a parent, this also serves as the foundation for that dialogue, that ongoing dialogue between parent and teacher. Don't you think that begins, you learn each other's communication style a little bit in that conversation, this kind of one-on-one time, or well, you know, family time together with the teacher, that really can create the foundation for that ongoing, hopefully ongoing dialogue.
It does, and it continues on through the year. And this is a great time to do this because it's getting acquainted. It's sharing with each other, and it starts that relationship. So when later, if there is a need to get together about a conference or mm-hmm. a specific activity in the classroom, that foundation is there. And you exchange ways to how best to contact us. And it may be by email, it may be face-to-face, it may be by a phone call. And you're really getting to know how best that we can work together to serve this child that we're going to share for the year.
Certainly sharing in that, you're right, that's a partnership.
It absolutely is.
All right, so home visits, and you said maybe even making a visit to the classroom beforehand is certainly another helpful way to learn more, help your child make that adjustment to
their
classroom. Help the parent make the adjustment.
Absolutely, and there's many different ways that takes place. It can be popsicles on the playground. Who could resist that? A chance to get out and exercise, and then everybody shares a popsicle on the way home. But another thing that we like to do is to connect a mentor family, especially with new families. And this is an experienced family that knows the ins and outs of a school. And when you're new, everything is a question. and as hard as we try from the school side of things, we try to be clear about communication, but what seems perfectly clear to us doesn't always seem clear to a family. So here's a number you can call and say, well, I don't know what that faith family is. What am I supposed to do something with that? And here's someone who can say, well, this is how it works and what your child will experience. And do I need to bring anything? No, the teacher will take care of it. And so these are ways. And then additionally, this mentor family connects people to events and helps them get started, introduces them to other people, because our goal really is that they connect to the whole community, not just to the teacher, and that this becomes a place where they feel welcome and more importantly, engaged.
I'm glad you brought up the million-dollar question when it comes to a school function. Do I need to bring anything? And does it need to be homemade or can it be store-bought? And that having that mentor family, you can ask that question without judgment, right?
So often a family might think, well, this is such a silly question. I should know the answer, or I don't want to bother the teacher, or I don't want to bother the principal. Mm-hmm. But we need to know. And
sure.
So we want those communication pieces to be in multiple forms. And that's important, too.
Great idea. Mentor families. I love it. How about that first day of school? What happens on that first day of school? I know for some families, it's especially, preschool or kindergarten, that first day of school can be kind of an anxious time.
It is. And those are probably my two favorite days, the first day and the last day. It's not like selling a boat, but it's because families are in and they're excited. And so many of our schools just allow for that so that you can walk your child in, take them down to their room, greet their teacher, help them find their spaces. Now, of course, this is a little different than high school, but there are also many ways that each level of our education work to provide that connection with parents. In our younger ages, some of our schools provide the boohoo room where a parent can drop their child off at kindergarten and then come down and have a donut and as they tearfully say goodbye to their beloved child, and at the same time they're connecting with parents. Mm-hmm. And
we call it the boohoo wahoo party at St. Mark's. Yes, yeah, it's the boohoo. Yes, for the same exact reasons, but then the wahoo is because there's a whole new chapter in our lives.
That's probably the difference between your first and your third. Also, we don't have too many third child boohoos. So, but the welcoming feeling, the this is my place. This is a place for our child is all key in that as well.
What about anything else about establishing that relationship before we move into the day to day things?
You know, I think too the part that I think about is we want a solid foundation of trust. and by that first day, and all of these pieces lead to that. And then as we continue through the year, we're going to continue to strengthen that foundation of trust. And certainly we talked about communication. It needs to happen in multiple forms, through newsletters, through blogs, through social media. Mm-hmm. Certainly the print, the tried and true works, but it may be in paper, it may be online on the website, it may be a push out in an email blast. And blogs add another dimension that have really strengthened that relationship. A teacher in a classroom may spend a lot of time at the end of the day or the end of the week and post highlighted pictures. They may describe an activity, and here it brings the parent into that classroom. And so the long faces of "what did you do at the end of the day" is not always met with "I don't know, we played." Instead, you have a view into the classroom. Social media also brings the here and now for families. And as schools work through a multiple ways with a general Facebook page or mm-hmm. a classroom blogged with a closed group, the whole key is to communicate what's happening in the classroom. And again, that can involve parents on a number of ways.
Our school for the preschool does just, it's kind of like a check sheet of things that possible things that might have happened during the day. And they just mark off the things or write in a little note on certain lines on there just to give us an idea of what happened. When did they have snack? What did they have for snack today? How did he do during nap time? Did he sleep or was he awake? Was he disruptive or was he just quiet during that time? What was his mood throughout the day? All those things that they can just mark off on the check sheet. What toys did he play with or what games did they play? All those things, they do a nice job of communicating that to us so that at the end of the day, when we sign out, get a little piece of paper that gives us a summary of how things went that day and what happened at school that day. So it gives us something to talk about, too, on the drive home as well. I really like that.
Excellent. Excellent. And that kind of communication when it's daily mm-hmm. is powerful. And imagine what it would be like if you had not had any communication until parent-teacher conference time.
And then we find out that our child has been talking everyone's ear off for a whole month. Yeah. But he's not. He's not. He's doing just fine. I love my son. Well, that regular communication is really key, I think, to me as a parent, feeling comfortable approaching the teacher and asking questions as well, because I know that, well, that they're paying attention to what my son is doing on a daily basis in the classroom.
One of those things that you talked about, Andy, which our parents love, is the use of text. Mm-hmm. You are getting communication in real time, which is which has been very powerful. And just imagine as a parent, and you may have experienced this yourself, you're dropping Oscar off for the first day and it's a tearful goodbye and he's clinging to a leg, or maybe not.
He clings to mom.
and how hard that is for mom to leave and know that he's going to be okay. And then 20 minutes later, she may get a picture text of him playing in a block center or uh-huh. off and engaged, and what a lift that is.
Sure.
And so here we see where schools are, we need to be sure as parents that our child is safe and cared for and functioning, and because if they're not, we're not able to carry mm-hmm. on in our roles either at home or at work. And so our goal in schools is to make this helpful for parents and not to build in barriers mm-hmm. or to make it more difficult.
With just, we are almost out of time here. I know, it went so quickly. The importance of these trusting relationships helps us, helps the education of the child in a number of ways. The aspects of that education are not just academic, but so many other ways, spiritually, certainly as well. Building these relationships is so key, and I'm so grateful for the Lutheran schools that do that, that work so diligently to build these relationships with parents. With just about, oh, maybe 20 seconds, 30 seconds, anything else about building these relationships, Becky?
Absolutely. Love those you serve with all your heart, all your mind, and all your soul, and all your strength. There is no commandment greater than these.
Indeed. Becky, thanks so much for being our guest today. It was great to have this time with you. Dr. Rebecca Schmidt, Associate Director of Lutheran Schools, School Ministry for the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, the Office of National Mission. Thanks for spending some time here in studio with us.
You're welcome.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.